Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the On Air podcast. We hope that you managed to survive the coronation weekend. I mean, we did our episode last week, which was all about the coronation and what we expected to happen. You can still go back and listen to that. But we are going to, of course, talk about what actually happened this week and kind of some of the bits we thought were our favourites, some bits we didn't like so much. And then hopefully in the future, we won't have to talk about coronations again for a long time.
Yeah, this should be it for a good 20 years. We'll be fine.
We'll be fine, yeah. Firstly, you've got more of a social life and more like friends and family and stuff around you than I do. So what did you do for the coronation? What was the setup? Paint me a word picture.
A word picture. Well, my sister and my niece and nephew, they had a little sleepover the night before here. So we told my nephew that we were having a party because he loves parties. He wants parties for everything. And he was like, it's a party for the king. So he came around on Friday night and he was like, are there flags, granny? There were flags, put some flags up for him. Got a little tablecloth and some little flags for him to wave. I made him a crown. So he was having the best time. And he was doing drawing next to me for most of it. And he would come and he'd sit on the sofa with me and he'd be like, when is the king coming? I was like, he's not coming to our house. He's got a big thing. He was like, it's the party. I was like, yeah, but he's not coming here. But no, he was a bit disappointed at that. But he liked seeing the horses. He liked all the soldiers in red because they looked like firemen. But he had a lovely time. And then my dad was like floating around the house on emergency, spotting and rescuing us from my nephew when necessary. And yeah, we just watched it in the front room. And we had like a mini afternoon tea where we had like sandwiches and sausage rolls, picnic. Nice. It was nice and quiet. And then we all got really tired because we'd spent the whole morning sat on the sofa watching TV.
It's very exhausting watching TV.
It really is.
No, that sounds lovely. I was in my pajamas at home by myself with the cat, I suppose he counts. But he was actually okay. There was one moment where he was trying to interrupt. I was like, I'm sorry, I can't play with you right now. It's the coronation. He didn't seem to understand. I woke up at 10 a.m. right on time.
I thought I'd get up like a bit early because I like watching the arrivals, so I was like, I'll get up about 8:30, and then I was woken up at 7:30 and I was like, this is a weekend, this is much too early.
Yeah, see, that's why at least my cat's lazy, so he doesn't wake up until I wake up. If I stay in bed till 1 p.m. he wakes up at 1 p.m. if I get up at 10 a.m. he wakes up at 10 a.m. so yeah, that's one. And I don't have any children around, so I never am rudely interrupted by other people, which is nice. I mean, the first thing I did check when I woke up was, firstly, that I hadn't slept in because I was really worried that was going to happen. But then also the weather, like looked immediately at my window, just be like, what's the weather like? Half asleep, what's the weather like just now? And it was mildly rainy. Could have been worse. But I can imagine in like the weeks leading up to it, that, you know, there was somebody at the palace who was like obsessively checking the weather forecast. Like, is it going to rain? Is it going to rain? What do we have to do? All the pictures are going to look so gloomy, and, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of that kind of build up, they kept being like, oh, the weather is looking slightly less likely it's going to rain. And yeah. Then they'd be like, oh, now they just set up a tent just in case it does rain. I was like, well, then it's not less likely, is it, if they've set up an entire tent?
But I didn't tune in for any of the commentary, so I don't know what it was like, but I did have, there was obviously some commentary like after or that I heard, but I'm not sure if they had the usual sort of random people popping up talking about random nonsense for 3 hours like they normally do.
They had Anton Dubek turned up at one point, Deborah.
Okay.
Meaden,
of course.
But they kept like rotating back to the same few people, like India Hicks was there about 87 times. Like, you're still there, go to another channel. Like, there's loads of them.
I did see her in the after bit. I don't know if it was a repeat. No, it can't have been a repeat because she was talking about what people were wearing. And there was a bit where she was sort of like, oh, yes, and in her very posh voice, oh, I'm wearing Susanna. And actually, the Duchess of Edinburgh was also wearing a dress by Susanna. And I was like, look at how royal I am. And oh, yes, and when I was with my godfather, King Charles, I'm like, get it, you're posh.
Yeah, Tom Cruise didn't appear, which I thought he would. I was like, he's got to be nearby. I don't think I saw Alan Titchmarsh either, and I was looking for him, but I did keep getting distracted. And they didn't do enough crowds. I like it when, like, in the lead up to something, they go into the crowds and talk to all the strange people in the crowds.
Yeah.
Like, I've camped here for 7 days because I was here. I did see someone who was like, I was here for the funeral. We did the lying in state. We're making it a hat trick.
It's always funny to speak to the crowd and, like, see, you know, oh, I came from... One of my other favourite things is, when they talk to the crowd and then you have one person who'll be like, oh, yeah, I came from Australia to watch this, just for this event. I came all the way from Australia. And they're like, wow, that's so far. Then somebody else will be like, yeah, I came all the way from Weymouth. It's like, not really comparable to Australia.
I do, like, it just makes me laugh so much.
But yeah, so I tuned in right in time for the procession thing to start. And so the little coach thing went off. Was it the Diamond State coach at that point?
Yes. Jubilee one, yeah.
The Jubilee one. So that went off. And I have, you know, for the first bit of it, for just the procession bit, it honestly didn't feel to me special. And I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm just saying, like, for me personally, when I was watching it, I was thinking, like, I was waiting for the moment where it felt like a coronation, if that makes sense. And I think at this point, it wasn't yet like a coronation because it was just a coach.
Like an enclosed coach.
Yes.
I can't see them. So I was trying to glance through the window, like, what are they wearing?
Yeah, you couldn't really see. And, like, they go in coaches at other occasions. I mean, the horses did look very fancy.
They had lots of blue on them.
They did.
I was like, why are they wearing blue? And I was like, I don't know. And she was like, Google it. It's like, I don't think the internet knows straight away.
No, no, not yet.
Like, in a few days, they might figure it out. But...
And I don't think I've ever, this is a really minor thing that, like, most people in the world don't even care about at all, but I don't think I've ever seen them in that kind of blue.
No, it's not like a special, like, royal blue.
No, it was a very nice shade of blue. But it wasn't like, when I think about carriages and stuff, I don't think I've ever seen the horses dressed up in that particular shade of blue. So, I mean, it still didn't feel like, wow, this is a coronation, look at that shade of blue. But, you know, I think, you know, the horses did an excellent job. But what you just said a minute ago about, like, kind of like trying to peer in through the window and kind of see what she was wearing, I think that was one of the first things that obviously we did. I think a lot of us was immediately trying to check what, because it was one of the big outstanding questions, really, was kind of what is everybody going to wear. We knew a lot of detail about a lot of random things, but we didn't know what the dress code was going to be officially. But, you know, I think what's interesting is that a lot of the discussion had been, like, around, oh, is she going to wear a tiara? Is she not going to wear a tiara? Blah, blah, blah. Or people going to wear tiaras or not? And, like, when I saw them in the little coach and I was trying to get a glimpse, I didn't even think about tiaras. I was trying to work out, like, is she wearing a long dress or a short dress? Is it, like, day dress or, you know, like, that was what I was trying to work out. I didn't, for all the conversation that people had about tiaras, it actually took me several minutes of them sitting in the coach for me to go, like, oh, is she wearing a tiara? No.
I didn't initially think about it. I don't think at all. I could see, like, her necklace, coronation necklace, her necklace, which was so shiny. And I think that just, my brain was just gone glitter. Because when I did sort of the angled it and I could see her hair, I was like, oh, her hair looks so lovely. And my brain went, there's no tiara. And I was like, oh, okay. But I was just initially like, what a nice hair. And I was like, that's where she was yesterday getting her hair done. She looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think one of the big outstanding questions had been, as I mentioned, the fact that we didn't know what they were going to be wearing. And obviously I missed all of the arrivals of all the foreign royals because I were kind of 10, but I did see that they were kind of in normal church attire, so like day dress with a hat. And then for the British royal family, it was kind of non-working royals were in that same dress code, so hats and day dresses, although there's a lot of like headbands rather than hats, but nonetheless. And it was only really for the working royals that there was like a significant difference. So the working royal women all wore long white gowns and robes, but they did not wear tiaras. They all kind of wore like floral headbands of varying natures.
Because I watched the arrivals, not the foreign royals, because they arrived at the same time as the procession. And they didn't really like, and I think that was why I was slightly distracted during the procession, because I was like, I know there are, like, literal queens arriving at an abbey right now, and I'm not seeing them. I'm seeing this carriage in the rain. It's like, I want to see that.
Yeah, like, I've seen the carriage in the rain for 2 minutes. You can go back to the church now.
But like I'd seen some of the like the obviously normal people, but like the normal guests arriving, the non-royal guests, the non-heads of state. And it was really kind of like you saw a lot of church outfits, like dresses or coats with hats, some without hats, and then you saw like some like kilts and things like that. And then we started to see some traditional dress, but then you saw people with like hats and like were essentially gowns. And then we saw like really elaborate hats and really small hats. And it was just, I was like, was there actually a dress code sent out? Or did everyone just go, what do you wear to a coronation? And yeah. pick the nearest film they could find to be like, a dress, sorted, I'll find a dress. Like, yeah. It was so, like, you know, at royal weddings, the dress codes, everyone comes and they look perfect to the dress code. For the Commonwealth Day service, they're all perfect to the dress code. It just felt like there were 8 dress codes, and I personally loved it, because it just felt a bit more like jazzy.
We always appreciate a little bit of chaos. Maybe it said like day dress and nobody knew what that meant. And they were like, what's a day dress? Do I have to wear a hat? Do I not have to wear a hat? And then other places like, well, I do wear a gown in the day.
This is just my normal outfit.
So don't know what you're talking about. I'd wear this to Tesco. Since, you know, we kind of talked about this in our last episode, but I had not been expecting tiaras. I obviously would have liked it if there had been tiaras, because I like shiny things. I, like most people, we are attracted to shiny objects. and so I would have liked it if there had been tiaras, but the whole time, partly to avoid like disappointing myself unnecessarily, but also just because of the coverage and the things that we'd heard from various places, I wasn't expecting tiaras. So that wasn't a surprise to me. What was really surprising to me was that the women in particular were in robes.
Yes, I think I was going into it, and if I had to like ask for one thing, it was the female working royals and like white gowns, because that feels more coronation-y than tiaras, because they wear tiaras semi-regularly. And I think we saw like Zara and Eugenie and Beatrice arrive, and they obviously were in normal clothes, and Anne was in her uniform, but we knew she'd be in that, and she was in robes, but she's Anne because she's special. And then I was like, when the Edinburghs arrived and we saw like Louise and James in normal outfits, and I was like, we're just gonna not have anything today. But then I was like, saw Sophie and Edward, I was like, Sophie's in robes and she's in a gown, I was like, and she's got a headpiece. I was like, what is happening? This is what I want. It's just these four at the end, like Sophie, Edward, William and Kate, if they've got it, I'm fine. So
I think like this is when it started to feel special to me. It wasn't really a procession, because we see a lot of processions and we couldn't see what they were wearing, and it was just a horse and a carriage, really. We, you know, in Britain, that's not that special. But when I saw them in the robes, that was the moment where it kind of felt special to me, because women in particular don't wear the robes very often. Anne's different because she's Anne. But, you know, like we don't normally see Sophie and Kate walking around in robes, like even at Order of the Garter and things, they don't have the garter. So they're in their church service dresses, their normal dresses, and then everyone else is in the robes. So that was when I was like, oh wow, this is the difference.
Yeah, it did make it look very like regal. Like I've seen the Order of the Garter gowns before, obviously, but I've only ever seen them like outside Windsor, you know, during that little walk. I've never seen them in a church or on a walk, you know, the order of, you know, the royal order gowns and the robes. And I just think, especially against the kind of, for the women, for it to be against the white dresses rather than uniform, they really like sort of stood out really vibrantly.
Yeah, definitely. I think so the women were wearing predominantly wearing the robes of the Royal Victorian Order, because there's less of most of the women who are in the royal family are like wives, and wives tend to not get the Order of the Garter for ages. It's only really given to a very limited number of people. Anyway, so they were mostly wearing the robes of the Royal Victorian Order, which are like blue and red, and like with the white dress as well, it was very like Union Jack patriotic. But they're very pretty robes. Like, I mean, the Order of the Garter always looks a little bit silly. but the Royal Victorian Order robes I actually really liked. It was a bit superhero, a bit Union Jack, but also very sort of royal and elegant in the same way. You know, there'd been all this conversation about like, oh, if it doesn't have tiaras, it's not going to be a coronation, it's not going to be special. And I think that they found a way to not have tiaras that, you know, most people in the crowd can't afford, and that would be a little bit too ostentatious, but they were still able to make it feel special by having these things that they wouldn't have in an ordinary church service and that you don't see very often. So it felt like elevated and memorable without being tiaras, which, you know, a lot of people beforehand had been worried about that for some reason. And also, like, remember, it was all this worry about, like, she was going to wear a flower crown. And she did wear a floral crown. She wore exactly what it said in the news she was going to be wearing. And everyone was suddenly like, oh, well, it's fantastic. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it looks like a tiara from a distance.
I know. I was always like, I would be on it for her to wear a flower crown. Like, I was imagining like one of those ones people wear to festivals.
Yeah.
I was like, please wear that. I think it'll really add to it. But I mean, I like to think that was her plan. And then someone was like, you can't actually wear a flower crown. And she was like, watch me. I will. I'm going to make my own flower crown. I would happily have them swap tiaras every now and then for those, because I thought they were so pretty, and so much prettier than some of the tiaras, especially the Brits have got. I was like, please, more of these things. Bring them out every other week. I'll take them.
They're probably a lot less expensive as well. With a lot of the, I'm not going to talk about all the outfits that everybody wore. And then I think with the working royal women who wore the robes, it was difficult in some cases to see the dresses. So they were just like long white gowns, really. I do think Kate and Camilla both had quite a lot of like symbolism and things in their pieces, which I really liked. So like Kate's gown had the flowers of the four nations, the rose, thistle, daffodil and shamrock on her gown, embroidered on her gown in silver. The headpiece, apparently the BBC commentators, I think this was Anya Hindmarsh who said this, after the event, said that the headpiece was designed by Alexander McQueen, who also designed the gown, but in collaboration with Jess Collett, who's a milliner, who apparently when she was starting her business, she got support from the Prince's Trust, which is Charles's charity. So I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah, I saw, I went to Jess Collett's Instagram page afterwards, and she obviously posted a bit, not saying like, oh, look what I made, but was like, oh, you know, congratulations on the coronation, King Charles. And she was like, oh, it's made such a difference to me. Like, I got my funding from the Prince's Trust and like it changed my life. And she posted it before they appeared. So she didn't mention anything, but it's all like, oh, and you know, I'm really grateful. I'm so excited for everyone to see today. I was like, I love it. It's like, I did that. I was there.
Yeah. I really like that touch, because I think like we all knew she was going to wear McQueen, because she wears McQueen to all the big occasions like this. And also, you know, she has a good relationship with them. She knows that they're discreet and they're going to keep things private and not tell anyone. So I completely understand why she went with McQueen. But it was really nice to have like somebody who I actually have never heard of, Jess Collett. I know a lot of the royal milliners like Jane Taylor and Philip Tracy and all those people who usually design hats. I've never heard of Jess Collett. So I thought it was nice that on this occasion she went with a designer who is not as well known and has that kind of personal connection to something that is so important to Charles. So yes, hopefully they took some pictures afterwards and we get some official regalia photographs. That'd be nice.
Yeah, then people can stop asking for them every 5 seconds.
if we don't, we're probably not going to get one until William's King. So now or never, really. But yeah, so they arrived, and then obviously Camilla and Charles were the last people to arrive. But Camilla's gown was also really lovely. It was white with gold embroidery, and amongst the things embroidered on it, we found out since, include her grandchildren's names, which is very sweet. And also she had two dogs, so she has Beth and Bluebell, who are her two rescue dogs, who are adorable and have featured in lots of official royal photographs, thank you Camilla. And she had little dogs embroidered on her gown to be to stand in for Beth and Bluebell. This is my thing, like I run a royal fashion Instagram, and I'm not actually that interested in just like somebody wore a pretty dress. And what I really love is the kind of symbolism of things and what they mean and what people are trying to say when they wear certain clothes. And so this for me was just like a feast.
Yeah, I absolutely loved Camilla's dress. I liked, it had all the kind of, it was like the expected embroidery of like the rose and the thistle and then, you know, some flowers because Charles likes flowers. And then I think, you know, when people saw the dogs, it was like, oh, that's so cute. And then it wasn't until people kind of looked closer and you could see like the names of her granddaughter, like Freddie and Lola, and I'm just like, that's such a sweet thing. It's the type of thing that like no one, you know, else, it's not for anyone else apart from to be like, my grandchildren are like so important to me. I'm getting their names embroidered on this historical piece of fashion.
Charles has stepchildren. Obviously through Camilla and sort of step-grandchildren through Camilla. And I think that that's quite significant because we haven't had any monarchs with legitimate stepchildren for a very, very long time. To have the opportunity to recognize them, I find that really significant. You know, I felt sending a clear signal that like her family are just as important as his family.
Yeah, just before the coronation, the royal family website released like 100 facts about Charles, Camilla and the coronation, and like the third one on Charles's was something like he's got 10 grandchildren, 5 his and 5 Camilla's. And I was like, I'm so glad A, they included it and didn't say he's got 5 grandchildren, but also like they were just his grandchildren. They didn't say he's got 5 real life grandchildren and 5 just kind of step ones. They were like, they're all his, he's got 10 grandchildren, 5 are his biologically and 5 are Camilla's. And it was just for the royal family website to put it like, so number 3 on this list of facts.
Yeah.
It was like, it just felt really special when I hadn't seen them really do that before. They don't tend to, because Camilla's family are private.
Yeah.
Do that big public sort of acknowledgements. And I just thought that was really sweet.
I did find some of the procession stuff slightly confusing because, and this, like the first sort of 5-10 minutes of the coronation I did find just generally slightly confusing, because first of all the liturgy I don't think was 100% correct, or maybe I read it wrong, but like the liturgy never said that they were going to be the merit holders, the people representing like the Order of the Garter and that sort of stuff coming in, because they were at the Queen's coronation. And I remember saying in our last episode that I didn't think that we were going to have those because they're not mentioned in the liturgy, but they were there when they all sort of started to process in. And then they also said in the liturgy that there was going to be all the people with the Commonwealth flags, but they came in before.
Yeah, like ages before. I saw them come in.
Ages before, yeah.
And I was like, aren't they supposed to be in the procession? Were they not?
There were like people representing the Commonwealth in the procession, but it said very specifically, I remember in the liturgy, that as part of the procession, there were going to be people coming in carrying the flags of the Commonwealth. And that happened like before Charles and Camilla even showed up at the church. So I have no idea. So I was very annoyed because I was like, we did a whole episode on this and I used the liturgy. I did some research for once and I know that what it said. And but apparently, yeah, I have no idea why that happened that way. So already within about 5-10 minutes, I was annoyed. And then I also think like once the procession had kind of come in, this is the first moment where I felt like I blacked out. It happens at other points during the ceremony, but like I know stuff happened because I watched it. I sat here and there was nothing else going on. You know, I was alone, so I couldn't have been, you know, got chatting to somebody or something, but I can't really remember any of it.
No, I'm going to be really honest and say, like, I saw Charles and Camilla arrive. I saw them get out of the carriage. I saw George.
Yeah.
And then the first time I saw Kate, I just blacked out for 15 minutes. And I cried. I didn't even know what happened. I just kind of was like, ah! It was so weird. My sister kept, my nephew kept going to my sister. She was like, why did you make Auntie Gracie cry? I was like, she didn't. I don't know what's happening. I'm being silly.
Yeah, see, I mean, I didn't cry, but if I had, it would have been much better if I'd been alone. I don't want to cry in front of people about the coronation of all things. But no judgment. This is a judgment-free zone.
So I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, at least you have a legitimate reason. I honestly have no idea what, like, I just think it was boring. I think that's why I tuned out. And again, this is not like a whole, like, oh, the coronation was so boring type thing. I just think, like, it's not, I'm not a massive fan of sitting through a church service anyway, but I know there's some action that comes, and so all of the in-betweeny bits that where there's no action going on and it's just talking and singing and that kind of thing, it doesn't really appeal to me. The only bit I really remember is Rishi Sunak, our prime minister, giving a Bible reading, which is notable because Rishi is a practicing Hindu. So he was reading a Christian Bible. And like, there have been some people who have been very racist about this and have kind of, David Starkey, is he called? Historian kind of said something about how Rishi's not grounded in our culture, which, I mean, he's British. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, there've been some negative reviews and my thing is not like that, but I genuinely was surprised because I didn't know that was allowed. Like if it had just been a Bible reading about like, be nice to each other, and everything will be great, that's fine. But it was a Bible reading that was like, and everything belongs to God. I was like, well, Rishi doesn't believe in that.
He doesn't believe in God.
Yeah. So that, I wasn't like, I don't think he should have been allowed or, you know, that I, you know, anything like that. I just genuinely was surprised that he his faith would allow him to give a Bible reading, you know, endorsing a different god. That was just interesting to me.
Yeah, if we have any Hindu listeners, please let us know.
Yeah, we have some listeners from really all over the world, so I'm sure that there's at least one Hindu person who's listening who might know. Is it like just okay in your religion to kind of to do that, or do you think Rishi was just like, well, I'm not missing out the coronation, love you, but love you Hinduism, but it's a speech of the coronation. I don't know, it'll be really interesting to hear. But yeah, so that's the only thing that I really picked out of this whole thing until it got up to the anointing. I just really didn't pay any attention.
Yeah, I have no notes on anything until the anointing, because yeah. I was crying, obviously. And I remember my sister saying something like, she was like, who's that man? I was like, that's Rishi. And she was like, why isn't Liz Truss doing it? And I was like, she's not prime minister anymore.
I did think when I saw her, I managed to catch that bit where they all came in. And yeah, it had like all of the living former prime ministers coming in. Obviously not the dead ones, that would be strange.
Carry them in as well.
Just kidding. And then Liz Truss was at the end of it. And I was like, you were prime minister for like 7 minutes. How did you get this cushy gig?
I know, I was like, not only does she get the whole of the Queen's death in general, she also gets a coronation invite. Like, what kind of good luck does
she have? Who does she sell her soul to?
She doesn't even have to be Prime Minister anymore. She just gets all the cushy stuff that comes with it.
Yeah. Oh, goodness sake. So yes, I guess the anointing was the next big thing that happened. Now, Zadok the priest. I've said in every episode where we have even vaguely mentioned the coronation, the only thing I want, they could all turn up in tracksuits. The only thing that I wanted was Zadok the priest. And obviously they gave us Zadok the priest during the anointing. It's a traditional song because the song is about an anointing process, the anointing of Solomon. And it's still the best song ever in the entire world. And it still gave me chills when I heard those first bars of the song, because this is the moment that I had been waiting for, and it's just a great song. I actually don't know who wrote it. Elgar, Handel, who was it, do we know?
Yeah, I think it's Handel.
It's always one of those two. Let's have a look. Handel.
We're like experts.
Yeah, if there was a song that's been sung, it's always either Elgar or Handel, so one of those. it's very, very well written and everything, but not as good as the Queen's Zadok. For me, the reason that I think is that, I honestly do not know if this is just like the sound quality or if there actually was a difference, but the Queen's coronation, the reason Zadok always felt so special, partly because the song is just great, but also it feels like there's thousands of people singing it. And it feels like the swell of noise that's is really overwhelming, but in like a good way, whereas it just felt like it was the normal size of a choir singing it, so it felt a little bit weedy, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, because I was listening and I was like, that sounds like Zadok the priest. I was like, oh, that is Zadok the priest. And I was like, oh, that's Zadok. I was like, do it again. Like, I was like, do it again later on, so it's a bit more,
yeah,
like give everyone the words and let them all have a go, like let everyone do it.
Yeah,
I need more.
It needs more people. It's the kind of song that needs more people. And I just, yeah. So it was still great. You know, obviously I'm not complaining. They still gave us Zadok and it's still a good banger, you know, given that it was the moment of the coronation I was most looking forward to. It was not as good as the Queen's. She's one up on Zadok's. Yeah. And so they sort of brought out the canopy thingy, which I thought worked very well, very smooth.
That's a nice screen.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, because with the Queen's, it was like a thing that they almost kind of, it was almost fully assembled and they like brought it over to her and like put it on top of her. Whereas with Charles's, it was like each person had a panel and they kind of came in and brought it was like a jigsaw puzzle almost. Although I will say that there were like tiny little gaps and it kind of reminded me of like, if you're in a public toilet, there's like gaps in between the door sometimes of a public toilet and like the edge of between the door and the wall. And I'm always worried that somebody's going to be like walking past and try and peek in through the gap in the door and look at me on the toilet. And I got vibes like that from it because I kept trying to peer in through those tiny little gaps to be like, what's going on? Can I see anything? Can I get a sneaky peek of the anointing?
I was like, zoom in a bit closer. I want to see. And they were like really staying away. I was like, at least zoom in on the nice screen. Let me see that in detail. But no, like you can look at it from a distance at this important bit.
Yeah. I know you want to talk desperately about Charles's outfit.
He had a nice cute shirt on.
The white, are we talking about the really simple white shirt?
Yeah, the very simple white shirt.
Yes, he was in a very, very simple white shirt. And I'd speculated last week that it might be kind of like Mr. Darcy, Pride and Prejudice, with like the low cut and the little ribbon thingy that they used to tie up their shirts in all those Regency movies. And it was not like that. It was kind of a bit like a politician who was trying to seem down with the kids by wearing a shirt untucked and no tie.
I saw him like, I was like, start to undress, because that sounds weird, but like start to undress by the side. And no one in my family noticed. And then obviously went behind the screen, but and I didn't see him kind of go behind the screen because he was hidden by priests. And then he appeared outside of the screen in his tiny little, I don't know what he's wearing, trousers, but this like older man. And you kind of know like Ebenezer Scrooge from like the old films where he was in a 90 with a nightcap.
Yes.
That's the vibe it gave me.
Yes.
My mum and sister were like, what is he wearing? Where's his clothes gone? My sister spent the entire day being like, I thought I'd say this, but he just looks like such a cute old man.
Oh,
he just looked like Ebenezer Scrooge to me. And I kind of was very sad he didn't get to wear that for the rest of the coronation, because I thought it was the best outfit of anyone on the day.
Move over, Kate Middleton. Charles in his old man shirt.
That's it. That's what I like.
Yeah.
But I did think all the quick changes went very well.
Oh, yes.
Kind of thought that would be a really awkward moment when there's just awkwardly like getting changed in the corner.
Yeah.
Like for PE, but that didn't
happen. Oh, yeah. That was the most awkward, yeah, in the changing rooms and PE, the most awkward moment of your life. So then we moved into the investiture, and so this is something that it wasn't wrong in the liturgy, but the liturgy sort of had a list of performances, and then it had the investiture and then more performances, and they actually happened at the same time. So the Greek performance, the performance of the Greek song, was at the same time as Charles was being invested with stuff and given all of the crown jewels and things, and I thought it would be sequential. It does make it shorter, I guess. Like we were rattling through at this point. I was like, very, very good on time. But I did think that, I don't know if it would have sounded better without the singing or not, but it sometimes made it hard to hear things that were going on.
Yeah, because at one point I suddenly heard, I assume it was the Archbishop of Canterbury, say something like, I heard him when the sword came out, him be like, this is the sword of, and I heard nothing else for like almost the entire thing. And I felt like throughout the whole thing, the kind of music was at the weird times. Like there were parts where it was just silent and I was like, where's the song?
Yeah.
And then there were other parts where I was like, why is there a song happening?
Yeah, so it wasn't a bad performance from the Greek choir or anything. It's just that it was an odd choice to me to have it at the same time as the investing. But yeah, everything went off without a hitch. There was the exchange of money, Penny Mordaunt paying somebody to get a sword that she'd already given them, which was just as odd in practice as I thought it would be in theory. You know, all that sort of thing, before it got to the big daddy, the crowning, which went very smoothly. This was the moment where I thought, if anybody's going to drop something, it should be now. Please drop the crown. But then there was a really funny moment. I don't know if other people picked up on it, but the Archbishop like put the crown down on Charles's head, and then he kind of stepped back and he like checked the symmetry of it and like whether it was sitting right. And it reminded me of when you're at the hairdresser and they've just finished giving you a haircut. They're like, look, they sort of like crouch down and look at both sides of your head to make sure that everything's symmetrical. It was very hairdresser energy.
The whole like investiture bit was like, it was quite fun to watch, but also I was really nervous because every time he gave Charles something, I thought he was going to drop it. And then like when he had to stand up for the sword, because he's wearing this like really heavy robe, he's like holding on to these equally old priests to the side of him. They needed to get some strong men.
But with the feminist podcast here, need the strong men. I think you could see that on Charles's face, and especially when it moved into like the next bit of the enthronement where they were moving him to the throne. Like you could see, I've never seen him focus so much as he did in this sort of section when he had all these priceless objects of like, he didn't look like he was, you know, really moved by the occasion, or it just looked like he was focused and terrified.
It was when they gave him the like scepter and the rod, and they were he put them on his like legs, and he couldn't quite get the right place, so he was like shaking. And I was like, please don't drop, or like have it like slide. You know when something slides off your leg onto like the chair? Because I was like, please don't break the scepter. I'm so stressed out right now. It's like, need to get this bit done. And then even with the crowning, it was kind of like the Archbishop was like kind of like, get on this head, and I'm like, okay, I've done my job. I don't need to touch it again.
Don't even worry about it now. I would have felt incredibly bad for the person who dropped it. They're like always being known for the rest of history as the guy who broke the orb in the coronation. You know, they had to move him over to the throne for the next bit, which is the enthronement and the homage. We never decided on that. There were no incidences that went wrong, but I do think everybody generally just looked terrified throughout the entire thing. So yeah, then the next section was the homage. And I was so right. How right was I, Grace?
You were on it. I was so on it.
I said last week, if you go back and listen to our episode, that the moment where William was going to swear allegiance and loyalty to King Charles was going to be like one of the most emotional moments for everybody. And it was going to be one of the moments that the press always pulled out as like a separate article all on its own and like talked about the symbolism of the relationship between William and Charles. And all of that has happened. And I mean, I found it, you know, impactful as a moment to see William sort of get down and kneel in front of his father and swear loyalty and allegiance and things. But I also think like throughout this whole thing, Charles had seemed very tense to me, like obviously because it's a hugely important occasion. He didn't want anything to go wrong. And this is the first moment where I saw like a tiny little crack in that, because it genuinely looked like he was trying not to cry.
Yeah, he looked so emotional. And, you know, I think I'd zoned out as he was sort of getting, he sat down and I kind of zoned out for a bit and I heard William's voice and I was like, whoa, what's going on now? Yeah. Where's William talking? And then I was like, oh, okay, this bit. And then the camera was getting like really close, zoomed into both of their faces. And I was like, oh, like this, they're both staring into each other's eyes so deeply. But no, it was a very, very sweet moment. And I was like, is William going to kiss him? And then is he not? He touched the crown. Why is he touching the crown? I'm so confused. Oh, he kissed him. Okay. And it was a proper kiss, not one of those like air kisses. Proper kiss on the cheek, like you give your grandma. I loved it.
Yeah. And he sort of, we think, according to the lip reader people, they think he said, thank you, William, afterwards, which in the royal family is an incredibly emotional display of love and affection. I think I had a lot of people who I was talking to about the coronation as it was going on and like afterwards and things, and that was one of the moments that came out from quite a lot of people as being something that they found really emotional. But when you said about them looking into each other's eyes, I had a post that I had on Tumblr, which has been surprisingly popular, about the moment when the Archbishop did it, which was just before William did. He also swore his oath on behalf of the church, and he started off by being like, I, Justin, Archbishop of Canterbury. And I thought, in my head, because I'd forgotten this is a coronation, I was just like expecting him to follow it with, take thee, Charles, to be my lawfully wed. And I was forgotten that it wasn't a wedding. But wouldn't that have been a curveball?
Like, plot twist.
Plot twist.
It's actually a surprise bigamist wedding.
Yeah. A bigamist same-sex wedding. The Church of England would be delighted. Yeah, we're taking this marrying the nation thing very literally.
I was going to say, and then they did the bit for the people, and I quite liked how clearly someone had gone to Archbishop of Canterbury to be like, can you be really specific that it's only if you want to? Can you just say you don't have to do it? Because he was literally like, and if you wish, you don't have to, but if you want to, you could just say this bit at the end where we all say God save the King. It doesn't matter. But if you do have the words in front of you and you want to join in, please. I was like, okay, we get it. We don't have to do it.
Yeah, that was actually my other big observation was that there was this bit in the liturgy that said that they were going to invite people to pledge their loyalty to the King if they wanted to. And we said in our last episode, like, people were a little bit overly dramatic about it, because yes, it does seem mildly, you know, Stalinist. So that was, you know, an unpopular thing. But at the same time, they didn't have a gun to anybody's head. No one had to do anything. It was just, if you'd like to, then you can. So it was a little bit overly dramatic in the coverage, but clearly a lot of people didn't like it. And so I think they adapted it slightly. Everyone said the words in the church anyway. There was a moment of like, is no one going to say it? But everyone did.
I was like, when it was printed in, obviously in the order of service, the people's words, mm-hmm. and I couldn't quite tell if it was right at the end of one page or across a page, because obviously it cut to the congregation and they all say it and then like turn the page in their order of service. And I was like, that's just such an awkward thing, because we're just like, I promise to serve you forever, turn the page. But they were all doing it and they were slightly out of time. And I was like, are the words across the pages? Is it all on one page? And then obviously they've hit the end of the page, so they're turning. Did no one think this bit was being filmed? think of all the times they could have had, you know, changed the order so it was right at the start of a new page or something, but no.
So then afterwards we moved on to Camilla's coronation, which was just kind of like a much shorter version of what happened with Charles, much more low-key. I mean, so we did get told in advance that they were going to show the anointing, and that it was going to be public. And I, as far as I can tell, it was like public in that they didn't put a sort of barrier around her in the way they had with Charles. But I don't know if it was just me. My camera didn't film it.
I feel like she was anointed where she was sat.
Where she was sat, yes.
Yeah, so I think the camera cut as they finished the anointing. So whether they were like, I don't remember what they were filming. Was it like the people, the congregation? But I don't know. But like they really got sneakily anointed her. I'm like, done. Can't watch this, peasants.
Yeah, it was very strange because it had been very, a big thing had been made about how it was going to be the first one that would be able to be seen. But then they didn't record it. So I don't know if that was a choice of the royal family. They still wanted it to be private from everyone. But that just feels strange. Like, oh, if you get an invite, you're allowed to see it. But if you didn't, then sorry, no. But I know it happened because I wrote down one of my standout observations from the entire coronation was immediately after there was like a bowl. The last bit, the only bit we saw was there was some sort of like bowl or something. I don't know if other people noticed this, but he wiped his oily hands on a bishop's sleeve, like one of the other priests. He wiped his hands on his sleeves. And I when I was younger and I had like oily hands or something from eating dinner, I used to always try and rub them on the sofa because that's what I was sitting right next to and I couldn't be bothered to go and get a napkin. And I always got told off and told that was rude and I shouldn't do that, or like I shouldn't wipe my hands on my sleeves and all that sort of stuff. But it's good enough for the Archbishop at the coronation, apparently.
Yeah, when I was younger, like when you'd, you know, be out and you'd wash your hands and there wasn't like a dry, I'd always like hug my dad and like wipe my hands on the spot. That's like what I did. But yeah, it was, I mean, I've just written like everyone was sneaky at this part. Everyone's just doing weird things. It's like, I don't know whether before someone had gone, oh, we're not even going to bother filming any of the anointing. And they cut earlier than they thought to. So he was like, I just put my hands in your sleeve. Doesn't matter. He was like, oh, now it's on camera.
I don't know, maybe that's his job. Maybe he is, you know, they've got all sorts of strange jobs in places like the church and the royal household. So maybe his job is the great sleeve provider. I don't know, you know, who knows? There's all sorts of strange things. But yeah, after the sneaky non-anointing that did happen, but we only saw the tail end of it, they kind of did the investing of Camilla with all of the stuff that she needed. It was really funny when they put the crown on her. I thought, because you could almost hear her just thinking, oh, just let me do it, just go away and let me do it, because the Archbishop clearly had not like factored in her hair and it was like pulling on her hair and she was like, she kept trying to touch it and just be like, go away, get your hands off.
Her hands were going up.
Yeah, her hands were going up to touch it, like, look, Justin, let me do it. But then I thought once the crown was actually on, she looked so much more zen and comfortable than Charles did. Charles, the whole time he was writing the crown, looked like he was terrified that it was going to fall off. Whereas Camilla, it was a bit of a difficulty getting it on, but once it was on, she was just like, oh yeah, this is fine. I wear this every day.
You're like, this was Camilla's moment. Like, they got the crown, and I like, as soon as he let go, she was like, right, I'm sorting out my hair.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Guys, I'm on camera. This is being beamed across the world. But she looked so at home being crowned in Westminster Abbey. Like, if I didn't know who was the like actual born royal, I would have said it was Camilla 100%, because she just was glowing. She was having a great time. My mum, my sister were like, doesn't she look wonderful? Oh, and we were like, should we call my auntie Catherine because she hates her? And I was like, is she going to be able to battle the fact that it's the queen now, but also it's still Camilla?
Yeah.
I want to know how she's coping with this.
She's sitting at home just staring at a collection of Diana plates.
She'd be like, oh, what do I do?
Yeah, no, she looked so at home. Like, and like, even, you know, there was a moment where after she was given the crown and she like stood up and walked over and she had to curtsy to Charles, and like, she's not the best curtsier anyway, and it was a little bit wobbly, but other than that moment, like, she didn't fall over, she was walking fine, she was smiling at everyone as well. Like, Charles barely smiled the entire time. He looked, you know, he was so scared obviously, and like, it was a very solemn occasion, but Camilla just had this like little smile, just like looking around, touching the crown like it was no big deal. She just, it looked like her coronation.
Yeah, I absolutely like adored her little curtsy because first of all, she did it while wearing a massive crown on her head. Like everyone else was like, oh, look at Kate's curtsy, or like look at Crown Princess Mary's curtsy in the crowd. And I was like, none of them have got a massive crown on their head. Like, give Camilla some props. Also, she's 75.
Yeah.
And also they both like smiled at each other, like, isn't this funny? We're both wearing weird hats.
Yeah. No, yeah, because there wasn't a lot of like interaction between the two of them. Like they were sat next to each other side by side, and then Charles went off and did his stuff. And then was kind of separate for Camilla for quite a lot of it. So it was like a moment of sort of like looking at each other like, oh my goodness, this is happening. And then this is the second moment where I blacked out.
Oh yeah, because it went on. My mum went, oh, it's nearly over. And I looked at the clock and was like, no, there's 45 more minutes.
Yeah.
She was like, what for? And I was like, you know, the religious stuff, the communion.
Yeah, that must have been what it was, because I genuinely, I sat and watched it, and yet I could not tell you a single thing that happened after Camilla was crowned before they walked out. Not a single thing. They went in and out of the back room a bit. I remember that because I was like, oh, this is very like a wedding. I didn't know they were going to sort of retire. Do they take the crowns off? Do they swap? You know, all that sort of stuff. That's all I remember, really.
Yeah, it must have been they did their like extra, the next outfit change like behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But I remember being like saying it was a communion and zoning out, and then they were like, and this is the blood, and I was like, oh, they're actually doing a full on communion. And then that was the point where Louis disappeared, so that distracted me for like 5 minutes, being like, has he disappeared or has he just got really small?
Was he never there the whole time? Did I make that up?
They just kept singing, and there was like one song I knew, like as a pim. I was like, these are just boring songs. Like, give me a bit of, you know, all things bright and beautiful. Give me something I know.
A lot of singing and talking, as we said last week.
Yeah, it was definitely the part where I was like, it got to that part and I was like, Mum, you can go to the toilet now. Like, you can go cook some sausage. Like, you can go now. We've hit the boring bit. And I was like, I'll call you back in if anything happens.
Yeah. Yes, so then that was the end of it, really. And they did their procession out. They walked out in their robes and crowns, and we heard God Save the King. And this was actually a moment that this did give me chills. I don't really know why, but I think it was like seeing them in all of their stuff. But also it was the fact that we sang the second verse of God Save the King, and we never sing the second verse of God Save the King.
No, whenever it's an Olympics and like they have to sing it, everyone just goes, oh, don't know these words.
Everyone know, even if you aren't a royalist, you probably have sung God Save the King at some point, and you could get your way through the first verse. But I have no idea what the second verse is, and most people don't. And because we just tend to sing the first one. And so hearing the full thing, I was like, oh wow, you know, and they're actually in all their stuff. And this is it just felt like a bit of a chills moment. And I also noticed Prince Louis. I was very impressed because he's only tiny and he's an excitable wee thing. And he knew all the words to the first and second verses. So I was like, I wonder how many times they practiced that at home.
I bet they were 100% like, we're going to do a talent show and you're all going to learn exactly the same song. They were like, well done, Louis. Should we do another talent show? Should we do that song again?
You were so good at it.
Like, can you sing me Grandpa's special song?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I can.
It just felt very grand. I think maybe this is because everybody was singing it. So you had that noise of a whole group of people singing the same song that was missing in Zadok.
Yeah, and also, like, the crowds outside, like, I thought I could, you know, like, when they do royal weddings and occasionally you can hear the crowd outside. I think that's the only part where I heard the crowds.
Yeah.
And there weren't even crowds that close to Westminster Abbey because they had, like, 59 million soldiers there. But, like, you could hear them just about. And it felt like, oh, this is it. This is the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And then they had the sort of military procession. And I think I went off and made a cup of tea at this point.
I thought it would be longer than it was. They were all chatting about it, like as they were coming out, and clearly they cut away from getting in the carriages because they were like, we're not going to watch if the king falls out of a carriage now. Like, that's going to be a disaster. but they were cutting and they were talking about how, like, there was more soldiers than, you know, there's been for 70 years. And they were doing this new thing where they were all marching in time to the same song at the same time, which they never, ever do. And they were showing them right at the beginning because they showed the ones up by Buckingham Palace first of all. And I was like, they're already there. And then they were like, and it goes all the way back. And I was like, this poor one's at the front, don't get to do any marching. I just walk through a door.
They've had to go to rehearsals for 6 weeks, just for a 5 minute of a walk.
But yeah, I thought, you know, I think this is the part, what the other part might be coming up, but where the rain, I think, really had an impact, because the crowds were there and you could see the crowds cheering, but also they were all in a Raymax and wearing carrying like massive umbrellas. So, you know, no one was holding up like a yay sign or something, because it would have shredded in the rain, which I think had a bit of a moment. And because it was so raining, even when the cameras were trying to sort of look through the carriage windows at the different royals, it was rain street.
Yes. Yeah. And like, you know, it's sort of like with Trooping the Colour and things, when they go around, the carriages are open. And I totally understand why they had the special ones, because they're special. When it was live, you know, we couldn't necessarily see much through the windows. And, you know, so you really have to, I think, be interested in the military displays to find the procession really interesting. And like, they kept saying in the commentary about how impressive it was that all of these people were drumming at the same time. And I am sure it is very impressive, but I don't really have much reference point.
Yeah, I wrote, like, I really prefer wedding processions when I can see what's going on. And the same thing's like, oh, what are this is a brand new maneuver. And I was like, they're just walking. Like, what part of this is special? this is when my nephew tuned back in, and he was like, because I asked him, like, which outfit are you going to wear? And he wanted George's outfit the whole way through, because he looked like a fireman. And he was like, wow, well, they're doing funny walking. And then he was doing his soldier marching around in his crown. Absolutely atrocious marching, but it was marching around as when I'm the king soldier. So he was having a great time and was significantly better than, I'm going to say, the people on the TV. But we like the horses. The horses and the shy horses got a bit of a mention. Arthur was like, are they elephant horses? And I was like, yes, I suppose they are elephant horses.
I don't know. Oh, is that just what an elephant horse means? It's just a big horse.
Well, I don't think it is, but I think he was just like, it's a really, really big horse, so it's got to be part elephant.
Mm.
It's like, suppose you're not wrong, I
can see the logic, and nobody can prove that it's not part elephant.
Yeah, I haven't checked with them personally. We had a lot of horse discussions at this part, which was good because there was nothing to see.
But it ended, and I didn't actually know this was how it was going to end. Maybe it was in the liturgy or in some sort of press announcement or something, and I just missed it because it was very hard to keep up with all the onslaught of information. But it ended at Buckingham Palace, and they all basically like went into the back garden. And obviously the Buckingham Palace's back garden is significantly bigger than anybody else's back garden in the world. So I say back garden, it was like a field, but it was technically their back garden. And so they all like walked in and stood in their little blocks. And then Charles and Camilla came out, still in all of their robes and the crowns and everything, onto like the back porch, basically, very big porch again, but the back porch of Buckingham Palace. And they did a little display and, you know, took their hats off and all the things that they do in the military. But then they did like a coordinated hip hip hooray, three cheers. And as somebody who's not really much of a military girl, that was really cool.
That was really cool. I knew they were doing some kind of salute.
Yeah.
But I thought it was going to be like at the trooping, the Platinum Jubilee trooping, when the Queen was on the balcony, kind of like awkwardly waving. That's what I was imagining. But no, I like the fact that they got in the garden. I thought that was very sweet. And I like, there was a bit where the commentator said like Charles wanted every soldier who was there to have the opportunity to do it. So, which is why they all got shoved back there. But yeah, I like that Anne was there as well. I just thought that was really sweet. She was sat on a horse there.
She was part of her own little block because she was leading everybody as the gold stick in waiting. But there was a bit where the camera showed her and she was just like laughing and joking with the guy who was standing next to her. And I was like, I thought you were all supposed to stand really still and look forward, and she's just doing what she wants.
No one's going to tell Anna.
No.
And I liked how all the page boys were just like, whoa, look at all these people. They were amazed. But yeah, that the like hip hip hooray bit, I was like, look, they're throwing their hats in the air, Arthur. And he's going, why are they doing that? I was like, they're doing it for the king, obviously. Like, it's a celebration.
I think it was just really loud. And like there was a gap in between the hip hip hooray, so you got to hear like the echo. I think it being in kind of, it was an open space, but still not like the middle of London. Like it's still sort of shielded in a way because it's got loads of trees and things around it and the big building. So I don't know, the acoustics were just really great. And it just sounded so loud and it was all coordinated and it was just like, it was very impressive. And I thought it was really cool.
you know, it was such a, I felt like it was also the first moment Charles looked relaxed throughout the whole service. Like, you see, it was not the service anymore, is it? The whole event. He just seemed like happy and like smiling. And I was like, oh, this is probably his bit. We was like, you know what I'd really like? It's just for everyone to say, hey, pray to me, please. And they were like, oh, go on then.
Should have done for he's a jolly good fellow. And then they went up onto the balcony for the fly past, which was interrupted slightly because of the rain. There was a military guy who was on the BBC who said what had happened and parts of it couldn't go ahead. I didn't really pay much attention to him because I don't remember what they look like on a normal year. So I wouldn't have really noticed the difference. But the Red Arrows were still there.
Yeah, apparently it was going to be like loads and loads and loads of like actual planes, like military right. planes like they had for the Queen. And then it was just helicopters because they were the only ones that could get up there. And the Red Arrows, who apparently they just don't care if they die or something because yeah. they got to come to.
Yeah, the guy on the commentator guy was said that they're used they, because they fly like ceremonial stuff all the time. They're used to doing it in worse conditions. But don't they all fly all the time?
Yeah, do they just not fly when it's raining? Yeah. I didn't know like planes couldn't fly in the rain.
Yeah, no, me neither. So yeah, but we still got the Red Arrows. It was quite entertaining because obviously Charles and Camilla can't look up because they're wearing crowns. So I'm sure they were just standing there like, oh yeah, I bet it's really lovely.
Yeah, it was, I thought it was really, you know, it was weird to see kind of like Charles and Camilla like center balcony. And I like that they had all their pages around them. I thought that was
yes,
very sweet.
Yes.
But I did quite like seeing the people being like, I was a bit disappointed in the balcony. I think they should have had them all come out and then sent all those pages in so I could have seen Will and Kate more. It's like, it's not their day, guys. The pages had more to do today. Let the pages have the moment.
Also, they get to go on the balcony all the time and watch the Red Arrows go past, whereas this might be the only chance that Camilla's grandchildren or Oliver Chumley get to be on the balcony to look at the Red Arrows. So don't be mean. They're children.
Let the kids see the Red Arrows. And they were having such a good time. Like, whenever they kind of cut to them, they were like, look at that! I just thought that the rain was, they all looked so cold and wet. I was like, let them go inside. They're cold. Like, they don't even have coats on. Like, they've all got nice hair. Come on, guys. But yeah, I think, you know, when it cut the other way and you could, like, see the crowds, like, I didn't think there were so many people. I don't know why I didn't think there would be many people, but there were so many people. And that was, like, joyous because they were all down there in their coats and umbrellas and they were like, woo, amazing! But yeah, on the balcony, they were just like, bit cold.
Capitulate. I think that was the only other observation I had, really. It was sort of like, you know, in the lead up to the event, there was all these stories about like no one's gonna turn up and there's only gonna be six people because everyone hates Charles and all the isn't the country apathetic towards the monarchy? And like, I'm sure that I'm not saying that, you know, everybody in the UK loves the monarchy and everybody in the UK wants it and everyone in the UK went out to the coronation and was there, you know, I'm not gonna say anything like that. But if this is what it looks like when most of a country hates you, I'd love to be hated because nobody shows up in giant crowds to say hello to me and to cheer me on. So if that's what being hated looks like, then bring it on.
Yeah, there were just so many. And I think because it was like raining, the back of the crowd kind of faded away into the mist.
Yeah.
And I was like, it goes on forever.
Yeah. But it was really interesting seeing some of like, just seeing some of the crowd shots and like how many people actually were there. And we've seen some photographs since from Chris Jackson, who's a royal photographer, of like the view taken from behind Camilla and Charles. You kept seeing him popping up in the background. He's got very distinctive hair, so I kept just seeing, oh, that's Chris Jackson with a camera there. And yeah, he got some photographs of like the view from the other side. And I mean, even if you've done it a lot of times, like gone up on the balcony and seen all those people, it must just be bizarre.
When I went to Amsterdam and I went to the Royal Palace, there's a bit where you walk down where the balcony is and you kind of like look out through the window. Mm-hmm. And like, this is where they do their like balcony appearances, which they don't do very often in the Netherlands. And I was like, I can see a H&M. I just feel like I would be so disappointed if I was doing a big royal moment. And I'm like, at least at the balcony in London, you get to see fields and other castles and millions of people rather than, you know, like Primark in the corner. I was like, this would be so disappointing. I'm not marrying into the Dutch royal family. That's it. I've made my decision. I like the surprise second balcony appearance from Charles and Camilla immediately afterwards, but there was not enough of a break for that to be fair. I was like, what? Are they repeating showing it again?
Yeah, it was very strange. It was like an encore, like in a show when they go out and but they immediately come back out again. It's like that wasn't yeah. If it'd been maybe an hour, that would have been, although everyone might have gone home, I don't know.
I like the fact that after all this, like all the stuff, they then went to Highgrove in the evening. Like such a normal thing to do. Yeah, I've got friends who live in Tetbury and they were like, look, you just drove past. Stars are like waving in their royal car. I was like, this is gonna go on TV now. Cat's Eye lights.
Oh yeah, exactly, because they wouldn't have seen it, will they? They were in it, but they wouldn't have seen it. Yeah, so I think all in all, it took a little while for the event to feel special to me. Like it wasn't an instantaneous thing of me watching it being like, oh, this is the coronation, this is incredible. But I think that in the end, it did feel like a special event, like more than just an average church service. They also managed to find a kind of balance between the traditions and what you'd expect of a coronation and kind of slightly more modern. We're talking modern for a monarchy, so it's not like super modern, but you know, like they'd updated things. It was a good balance. So I'm not one of those people who's sort of, you know, I've seen a lot of the commentary afterwards talking about how like this was a magnificent event. It's hard to put into words how incredible it was. Like I'm not quite at that level. But I would say my general view is like, I'm glad that I got up to watch it. And it did feel like a coronation rather than what I was worried about of it just feeling like a normal church service.
Yeah, I think I kind of watched it and I'm very glad I watched it. I did enjoy it. And I was like, you know what? I'm glad they do a coronation and not yeah. like an enthronement or an, you know, investiture because
yeah,
it did have something a little bit different. And I did think like for all those, you know, like those heirs that are there, like Victoria and mm-hmm. Hakon and Frederick, you're like, we just signed some paper.
Yeah.
But that's all we get. But yeah, I thought, you know, I normally for like an event like this, I really enjoy the build up and like, I didn't massively enjoy the build up because I didn't really find there was a build up. But yeah, I did. I enjoyed it more than I thought it was. I thought I was going to come away and be like, that was really boring. But I was more like, that was mildly entertaining.
Yeah, there were some boring bits, but I'm sure they were necessary for the ceremony. But overall, you know, it went off well. Nobody dropped anything. Nobody spashed in the Archbishop's face. So yeah, I think the biggest disappointment of the whole thing is that we still haven't come up with a name that's as good as Platy Jubes.
I know, I keep seeing people being like, what about the Corey Nash or the Chazzle Dazzle? I was like, they feel like they have different vibes to them. Like, if I was going to use Corey Nash in a sentence, I'd be like, you know, like, oh, the Corey Nash is happening later. But the Chazzle Dazzle's like an event, and whereas Platy Jube covered everything, and no one's come up with something as good as that for the coronation, and it's stressing me out a bit. If we can come up with Cosy Lives, we can come up with something for the coronation. Come on, people, get on with it.
I know, yeah. Very disappointing that. But yeah, overall, I don't know, 7 out of 10?
Yeah, 7 out of 10. Solid 7.
Solid 7. Which is fine by me.
That is all we have got for this week. Maybe some other things happened. I paid attention to no other royal events for the last week because there was a coronation happening. We hope you enjoyed listening. I think it would be great to go back and listen to last week's episode. And then this week's is like a two-parter. And be like, oh, they were wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, they knew that. Yeah, but let us know what you thought, what your opinion was. Go and listen to all episodes, review us 5 stars everywhere you can, leave some nice comments, and have a nice week. So that is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.